This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
So I'm really proud of myself for not sneaking out of my yoga class and going to your prenatal yoga class this morning.
I knew you wanted to come in mine.
I really did. And like my fucking ass is like so sore already. I just like don't work out anymore. And I really, at this rate, like I should have just pretended to be pregnant and gone into the prenatal class.
Yeah. I mean, there's only 8 people. So you probably could have come on in.
What is
We're a welcoming group.
What is prenatal yoga like?
It's amazing. I recommend it. I mean, for anyone that's pregnant, it really is. Well, it's a little more chill, I think. You can't do hot yoga, obviously, when you're pregnant. The dehydration.
Oh, yeah, obviously, I guess.
But there's a lot more modifications than you would think, right? Because you can't do anything where you're like on your belly. So what's it called? Like the chaturangas? You can't do that when you like low down. A really hard thing where you lower down really slowly.
Wait, do you do happy baby pose?
Yeah. And like we all like, and I laugh every time.
You're like rocking back and forth with your big belly. Yeah. I wonder if that's why it's called that pose, happy baby.
And then a lot of just like changing positions really slowly. So you don't get orthostatic hypotension. So you have to just kind of change positions.
I saw like a lot of like, you had a lot of modification, like supplies, like the boxes and like blankets and like cushions and stuff. I was like, I want cushions in my class. What the fuck?
I think it's great. Like we really can connect with your breath work, and I think it's going to help prep for labor. I've heard it really helps prep your body for labor and learning how to soften your pelvic floor. And like, it's not so much about being like as strong as it is about learning how to control your muscles and breathe. And
well, there you go. I mean, and if you don't know, you know, enough already about being pregnant and what to expect as midwife, then I mean, maybe this will help too. So if you haven't noticed, we are here for a very special episode of the WOMED this week. Dani is traveling out of town. She's in New York. We will catch her next week. We are coming live from Chicago. It is a special episode of the WOMED with me and my identical twin sister, Nicole. Nicole, welcome to the WOMED.
Thanks for having me. You know, when you asked me to be on the podcast, I thought Danielle was going to be here. So I'm actually kind of sad because I have not talked to her in a bit. And so when I just found out it was just me and you, I was kind of bummed.
Yeah, she's got some spicy updates. So yeah,
I know. I need to talk to her.
Yeah, you're just stuck with me. Sorry. But no, I'm really excited because I think this will be a really great conversation for a lot of our nursing students, a lot of our nurses, any of our pregnant listeners, and just anyone. Also, maybe any one of our listeners, a twin. So yeah, Nicole and I are identical twins. If you didn't know, yes, I have an identical twin sister. We have been pretty much attached to the hip since we were born. Nicole is now 24 weeks pregnant herself. I'm curious, Nicole, did you at any point like think that maybe you were going to have twins?
Oh, yeah. I think, well, twins run in our family.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people were like hoping that I was going to have twins. But I actually almost did have twins. I like ovulated 2 eggs. And I know you, like most people aren't going to know that information about their cycle, but I looked at my ultrasound report, and basically when you ovulate every month, and I don't want to lose anyone here, but when you ovulate, you create like the corpus luteum, and that is what, if you don't get pregnant, it like dies off and goes away. But if you do get pregnant, it stays on your ovary. And that's the thing that releases all the hormones to sustain your pregnancy until your placenta develops, until you're about 12 weeks. And so at my 8-week ultrasound, I had 2 corpus luteums, one on each ovary, which means I ovulated 2 eggs from each ovary and was like sustaining, possibly could have been 2 pregnancies.
Shit.
So I almost think I had twins.
Would they have been fraternal though? Like, is that how?
Yes.
Okay, so they would have been fraternal.
Yes, they would have been fraternal.
But that's like still crazy that you
but
ovulated 2.
But I've never seen that on any of my patients' ultrasounds ever.
Really?
Yeah. So
oh God.
It almost happened.
So maybe it like actually does run in our family and like maybe
it's
going to happen.
Yeah, you should be scared for the future.
Oh my God. But like, was part of you like even a little bit sad?
No. I mean, I love having a twin. I just think I want my children to like have their own
to like
identity.
Be normal. not have to grow up with a carbon copy.
I just don't know how any parent with twins does it. I don't know how our parents did it. I don't know how I have friends with twins, how they do it.
Especially financially, like now that I'm an adult and have to think about like you also like thinking about like the finances of having a kid, I cannot imagine having surprise. Now you have to pay for two. Like what? No one talks about that part of it. It's just like, what the hell?
I do feel like in a certain way, it would have been cool to parent twins.
True. Yeah.
As a twin, because you know what they're going through.
That's true.
And how cool would it be for that child to grow up with a parent that's a twin that understands?
What would be like the biggest difference you think you would have done differently about raising twins? What do you think is like super important for raising twins?
I think mom and dad did a good job of trying to let us be our own person.
They ended up
doing everything together.
They did really try. Like when we were in middle school, like Nicole was on a basketball team and I was a cheerleader. And it was like a very like weird, very time weird, strange time for yeah. us. Like I would not like to go back to that time. It was very weird. And it was like the one thing that we didn't do together. And it was like, I don't think I liked it. Like I did not like not having you, to be honest.
Right.
Like it was weird.
I think it's gotten a lot better now that we have kind of embraced that it's okay to have similar interests and to look the same. And I don't have to dye my hair black.
Yeah.
And you don't have to get, I mean, keep you get tattoos. But
like Nicole, like literally when we were, I don't even know, we were in our early 20s and like, I don't even know who started it first. Like which one of us started rebelling first and was like, I'm going to look different than you. I think it was you.
Yeah.
I think you were like, stop copying my nose ring.
Yeah. And dye like, my hair black.
You were like, stop copying everything that I do. Stop stealing all my clothes. Like, I'm dyeing my hair black and I'm getting a nose ring.
Well, that is just you with the stealing of clothes. I've had to let that go for my own sake.
I know. Even my boyfriend right now, Richie, like tells me, he's like, Jackie, like, you don't have any respect or regard for other people's things.
I would agree with them. Thanks, Rich.
And I'm like, don't tell this.
I feel
this
so
to
seen.
I'm like, I think it's because I just grew up with a twin and like thought everything that was hers was also mine.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, also, I have really good taste in clothes. I know. So I don't blame you.
Like, take it as a compliment. Like, your outfit is fire flames. I'm going to steal it. Like, take it as a compliment. Anyway, but I agree with that. Like, I think as we've gotten older, we've gotten more comfortable. Like embracing our similarities, but also embracing some of our differences too, even though there's really not a lot of them.
I mean, we're wearing basically the same outfit right now.
Yeah. Nice cozy sweater. Do you have leggings on?
Yeah.
Slippers. I know. And our hair is starting to look the same again. The color, we're wearing the legitimate same earrings right now.
Yeah.
Are these the ones
the same?
Yeah. These are literally the same.
Gold hoops.
Like this is not, they're not just gold hoops. They're a specific brand and a certain type of gold hoops that we're both wearing. Yeah, we dress the same still, accidentally.
Yeah, not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
That would be really embarrassing.
Yeah, that would be weird. Like, we don't go to, like, twin conventions. Like, we don't do any of that weird stuff. But we do accidentally dress the same if we don't send a text, like, beforehand and what the other is wearing. Like, outfit check.
And it's not, like, basic. Like, today is basic.
Yeah, today
we're
basic.
Of course, we're wearing neutral sweaters and leggings.
Yeah.
But, like, a few weeks ago when I was wearing that bright green dress and you wore
like a bright green set. Yeah. Like same color.
We couldn't.
Bright green. And then we were going for a walk, we took the dogs for a walk and we were both wearing like bright red crew neck sweatshirts and like yellow pants. It was such an abnormal, like McDonald's gross, like color combination that like, your husband, Mason, was literally like, what the fuck are you two doing? We were like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing.
Yeah, we can't leave the house.
Ugh. Anyway. Well, I mean, I'm sad, I guess, that you're not having twins, but like, I get also why you maybe wouldn't
be super pumped. I just couldn't deal with what we were when we were growing up.
Because like, it's a whole...
We're good now, but we used to fight a lot.
I mean, I give our parents so much credit. Like, from all through school age and like teenage, like middle school, high school, like that's a lot raising twins. Like what if one of them is like doing better in school than the other one, but the other one is doing better at sports. And then the other one has to have braces, but the other one doesn't have to have braces. So it's like this like weird, not even like competition. Cause you and I were never like, I don't think like competitive in like a bad way.
Not
it was always this like
comparison that other people would always be comparing us. They'd be like, well, which one of you is smarter? Which one of you has more boyfriends? We're like, right. We don't have boyfriends because we're ugly. So,
which people don't believe, but like,
it's like ugly it's until true. I was in college. Like,
yeah.
Wait, when did we
know? It was like, I think on the same day we like realized. Yeah,
the same day we were like, got, I think like our senior pictures back in high school. And we both were like, oh my God, are we like not ugly for the first time in our lives? But it builds character and it builds humor. So if you grow up in an ugly duckling like we did, it's fine. It's all going to work out for you. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. Sorry if you're having twins. If you have a twin, though, like you can relate. You can relate to this.
I mean, who's to say like you could have twins?
I think if I was having twins, like I think I would get over it. I'd be like, I don't know. But then I'd be really sad. Like, what if they didn't like each other and get along like how we do? Like, I don't know. Yeah, that would be really, I'd be terrified to have twins. More so for like middle school, high school years, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Like when they're young, they're fine. You just have somebody to play with
and each other. And you're just like never
sleep. Yeah. So let's reel it in for a second. So as I just stated, Nicole is 24 weeks pregnant, but she is also a certified nurse midwife. And you are not always a midwife. Like I said, we have gone through like all of our education and major things in life together. We obviously went to high school together. We went to college together. We played a sport in college together. We did our master's in nursing together. And then we even started working in the same hospital together right out of nursing school. I worked in a neuro med surg unit and Nicole worked literally on the same floor across like
the double doors
in the neuro ICU. So like I would have patients that eventually would have to go to the ICU or transfer patients to the med surg unit. So we worked legitimately.
And that's just not fair because these neuro patients are already confused. And they're like, didn't you just, weren't you just with me? I remember they're we like, transferred patients back and forth to each other.
Like, no, that was my twin. So we literally have been attached to the hip and you were in the neuro ICU. You were like a semester into starting your acute care nurse practitioner degree before you had a come to Jesus moment, as I like to say, and you completely switched to be a midwife, like from a neuro ICU to midwifery. How did that happen?
Wow. It's so simple as in nursing school, I witnessed a birth in our labor and delivery rotation.
Which, wait, by the way, we were on that rotation together, were we not?
Yes. And you probably remember, it changed my life. It totally did.
It did. You loved it. Yeah. I totally forgot that we did that rotation
together. Yeah, it was a vaginal birth with a midwife in a hospital. And I was like, what is this? I did not know you could do this as a nursing career. And I didn't even know midwifery existed for like advanced practice nurses. I just thought it was the coolest thing in the entire world. And it just felt like a calling. It felt like I had a deeper like spiritual kind of connection with witnessing a birth. And I just thought, wow, you could do that every day. Like, that's amazing. How cool is that? And I think as, you know, that rotation ended and you go through the rest of your schooling, people will kind of sway you to kind of, you know, start in med surg or give you advice, you know, to do one thing with your career and, oh, you shouldn't do that, you know, midwifery, your hours are going to be crazy. You're going to be on call all the time. And, you know, so it's a little bit different. We got out of nursing school, I think it was almost 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Where it was really hard to get a job in a specialty unit like labor and delivery.
It was a lot different than the landscape now, for sure.
And so when I got offered a job in the ICU where I did my, you know, kind of capstone rotation, I took it and I was so excited just to start working. And you get comfortable, right? Yeah. You learn so much. You learn all these very specific things to your specialty. And it's not like I didn't like it. That's the thing is I really love being an ICU nurse. There's things about it that I still miss. And I love those shifts where, you know, you have some really sick patients and you're just in their room titrating the drips and, you know, you're on your toes the whole time. And a part of it can be kind of quiet and where you stay really focused and, you know, can have to notice really small changes in your patients that can make a really big difference. And I really loved that part. But I think what is so interesting, and looking back now, I think a lot of people will relate to this. I just felt like I wasn't making a difference.
Wow.
As an ICU nurse.
Yeah.
Clearly, like looking back now, I was. But when you're in it and you're doing it day in and day out, I think it's hard when your patients, a lot of them are intubated or like they can't speak, and you're seeing a lot of really poor outcomes, not just death, but debilitating, you know, brain bleeds, injuries, things like that, where you kind of question the meaning of like, why am I doing this? And you don't have a lot of support from the hospital that you work with. No one's really telling you you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
No one's thanking you. You kind of just go in every day and it's like this really heavy thing.
Going back to when you were in nursing school and it was time to start looking for jobs, was there a part of you that was like, maybe I should apply for L&D, or it really just was like so many people were telling you med surge, and then you got that ICU offer and you almost just like just were so happy that you didn't really think twice?
I think, no, I did apply to L&D. I couldn't even get an interview.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just wanted to start working.
Yeah. And I totally relate to what you say. And I think this is what happens to a lot of nurses, is that you hear all the time, like, it's so easy to switch specialties. And it's not that it's that hard to switch specialties. It kind of is a little bit harder, I think, than people make it out to be. But I think it's like what you said, is once you get into your job, you realize how difficult that one specialty is. And it can take years to start to really feel comfortable in what you're doing. And so then by the time you finally feel comfortable, you're like, well, do I want to just throw this all away and go do something completely different? Like, I'm happy here. I'm comfortable here. So you're working as an ICU nurse now for a few years. You're feeling comfortable in what you're doing. You're at this time like precepting other nurses in the ICU. So like, you know, obviously killing it at your job. We're halfway through a semester of acute care nurse practitioner school. When did you realize that you didn't want to go down this path? What was that moment actually like? Like, what did it look like?
I remember it very distinctly. We were in class for critical care MP, and we're learning about managing patients on ventilators. And I just was sitting there in class being like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I don't want to manage vents. I remembered, like, I felt so passionate about labor and birth and women's health that I kind of brushed to the back burner for so long. And it was also right after I got married, and I think I felt really settled and finally was like, okay, what do you want to teach your future kids about their jobs? Do you want to teach them like it's okay just to do something that, you know, you are good at and, you know, pays the bills? Or do you want to show them that they can really go after their dreams and do the thing that they're the most passionate about, even if it scares them a little? I remember that was a big part for me, was knowing deep down the whole time that I wanted to be a midwife. And I was so back and forth for a while. And I remember just asking the universe, please, like, give me a sign. Like, I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm supposed to be a midwife, but I don't know how to do that. And I was in the ICU working, and I took care of 3 pregnant patients that week,
which is like insane. Like,
which never happened
ICU.
Yeah, one of them we had to bring down for a C-section, and then the other one had, you know, really bad brain bleed. And I just knew that I needed to be in that type of world. Dealing with pregnant patients.
That was like your sign.
Yeah.
And you just knew. And you like, you applied.
Yeah, that week.
That week.
I told my boss even in ICU that week. I told him and I said, that did something to me. Like, I need to make this switch.
What were you most scared of?
I knew I would be starting over again. And I think that's what I was the most scared of, is I finally felt comfortable in the ICU. And that takes a long time too.
Yeah.
And I knew how hard that was. You know, those nights where you get scared even to go into work and you get a little anxious. about what the night's going to bring you, or that, you know, your shift is going to bring you. And I just knew I was going to be starting that all over again, times 100, with wanting to be now stepping it up to a provider and not, you know, leaving nursing even and becoming an APRN was another big jump.
I think that that's a really common feeling in nursing, especially right now since the pandemic. Obviously, you didn't leave the bedside. You are still at the bedside, technically, you know, delivering babies and you're seeing patients in clinic. So you're not exactly leaving the bedside, but there are so many nurses leaving the profession now since COVID, and so many interested in making some sort of change, like whether it's to a completely new specialty, whether it's to admin or research or something that's a little bit more sustainable, or maybe they're finding like a come to Jesus moment like you, where they're like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. What advice would you give someone in that position that's thinking about making a switch, but maybe they're scared?
I think you really need to think about what lights you up and what you're passionate about. And for me, that only took one birth as a nursing student to know that's what I wanted to do. And I think I spent the next few years convincing myself that I could not do it and I wasn't going to be good enough, or whatever reason you make up in your head. And I think you just need to listen to that gut feeling, that little voice inside your head telling you, no, this is something you're passionate about. This is something you can make as a career, and just do it. And don't let other people's opinions and advice kind of sway you one way or the other. You just have to really go with your gut instinct. I think too, nursing is so different now that like your job is always going to be there. If you ever need to go back to it, they need people with your experience. Yeah, they don't want to lose you.
No, 100%.
And they'd be happy to have you back.
Yeah.
And so if you need to take 6 months or a year to try something else out, like it's not going to harm anything.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, you know, make the leap. Your old job's always going to be there.
I think that's such important advice, because people get so scared. Like, I think especially with nurses, there's like this people-pleasing tendency where they're like, oh, I don't want to let my boss down. I don't want to let my coworkers down. Like, my unit needs me. And it's like, at the end of the day, is your hospital system really, really, like, are they really having your back on what's best for you? If these people like really care about you, your coworkers, they're going to want to see you flourish in something that you're really passionate about. And if you go try that out and you realize, like Nicole's saying, that the happiest day of her life was the first time seeing a live birth. Like the first time I saw a live birth, I thought I was going to pass out. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So that's great for you. But if you make the switch to L&D and you're like, just kidding, I'm like Jackie and this is disgusting and I don't want to ever deliver a baby. Exactly. There's still a million things for you to do. You can still easily go back to what you were doing or find something else. So yes, you're taking a risk, but you're lucky that we're in a field where there is going to be something for you to fall back on.
And people thought I was crazy for sure. I mean, I was in midwifery school then, working as an ICU nurse.
Yeah. So you had like really no L&D experience when you were entering midwifery school. Looking back, did that feel like a supported environment for you, or was it really difficult?
I would say I had some midwife mentors that never worked labor and delivery that supported me, and they understood because that was their path. But I think a lot of midwives and certain people I went to school with that worked labor and delivery thought you had to have labor and delivery experience to become a midwife. And at the end of the day, like most programs, you don't. And there's a reason you don't. It's because they're two very different types of jobs. I think my experience as an ICU nurse gives me such a different outlook on managing labor and birth. I love the adrenaline rush. I know how to handle myself in an emergency when things don't go the way you plan, because that happens literally all the time. But I still view birth as, it's not an illness. It's not like I have a patient that's in the ICU that's sick that needs to be on medications and drips. Like, I view labor and birth as midwives should, that it's a normal physiologic process that, unless there's a medical indication, we don't have to interfere with.
And so I think this leads me to my next question, because there are a lot of misconceptions about midwifery and what midwives actually do. Can you just explain really fast to our listeners or anyone tuning in that maybe has heard the term before, or, you know, they know that midwives deliver, but they're not sure the differences between an OB and a midwife. I get sick when people confuse midwives and doulas. It's like, those are very different. Can you just explain really quickly, like, what the scope of midwife does and your specific degree? Because you have your doctorate.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions. And for the sake of this, we'll just stick to what a certified nurse midwife is, because there's different ways to be a midwife too. But in terms of being a certified nurse midwife, so that falls under the umbrella of APRNs, or advanced practice nurses. So there's three columns I like to think about it. So then the first column, you have all of your nurse practitioners of all their various specialties, your family nurse practitioners, pediatric nurse practitioners, psych NPs, you know, you all go through your specific training and graduate, pass your boards, and have your specific scope of practice. And in that second branch is your certified nurse anesthetist, right? They have totally different schooling than you did as an FNP.
Yeah.
Different training.
Like 5 times more good for them.
Yeah. They have to go to school like for 3 years. And then in that last branch, that's your certified nurse midwife. So we can see our own patients. We prescribe medications. We practice independently. And in our scope, you know, we're trained as basically like women's health nurse practitioners to work in the clinic and see gynae patients and do well woman exams and pap smears and birth control, IUDs and implants.
Not breast implants.
No, Nexplanon implants. Thank you. And, you know, also do prenatal care and postpartum care. But then there's a whole other side to us where we're trained in managing labor and delivering babies and birth and that a medium postpartum period. And that's a big part of our scope of practice too, is that extra labor and birth part.
Yeah, it is wild to me how much you are qualified and certified to do. Run us through, like, what is a typical week like for you then as a midwife, like work-wise?
That's what I like so much about being a midwife, is that anywhere you work, it could be different, but I really like where I'm at now. Working in a hospital system, I will say if I wanted to work in home birth or I wanted to work in a birth center, I could. And that is definitely an outlet that a lot of certified nurse midwives will take. But I will say the majority of us do work in hospitals. So my schedule is going to look pretty similar to any like full scope midwife working in a health system. So I do 3 days a week in the clinic, in the office, just regular hours, 8 to 4:30. I'll see around, I don't know, 15 to 20 patients a day, and that'll mix between gynae and prenatal patients. And then usually I do 1 to 2 12-hour shifts in the hospital, which mixes between, could be a day shift, could be a night shift, just like a nurse does, 7 to 7 in the morning or 7 to 7, you know, overnight. That could be on the weekends, holidays, things like that. So it ends up actually being 40 hours a week. And that's how our schedule works. And it works really well.
You're a busy freaking lady. That is a lot. So would you say that birth is your favorite part about being a midwife? Is that your favorite part of your week, is going into the hospital, or does it just kind of depend?
It definitely is what drew me into the career, and I love birth. I don't think I could only do birth, though. I really love seeing my patients during their prenatal care and developing that relationship with them, and seeing them like 12 to 15 times during their pregnancy, and then getting them ready for their labor and birth. And, you know, when you work in a really big hospital system, having that intimate patient-provider relationship, it can be really hard to find. So it still gives me a lot of that almost like community-based type of care, where I know my patients and I know their families and I know their sister and their mom. And having that balance for me is really great. I will say, the hardest thing is probably setting boundaries. I think that was the biggest jump for me from being a nurse to a APRN, is feeling like there's times where I can't turn it off.
Yeah. Like in terms of like checking up on, because your computer's constantly going off with messages, with labs, obviously. And when you're seeing patients that will go into labor, that's such a spontaneous thing that you don't know if you're going to be working when this patient that you've been seeing for all their prenatal care is going into labor. So you want to know, you know, like how they're progressing and what's going on, even if you're not necessarily scheduled. Is that what you mean? Or is there even more to that?
Right. I definitely think managing labs and ultrasound reports and patient messages is something, you know, and charting, the big thing I, you know, we have to take home with us and finish on our own time. But it's hard to not, you know, think about your patients outside of work too. And sometimes at the end of a really long, busy day, I just feel, yeah, it's just, it can be exhausting emotionally to have to hold space for so many people in one day that are going through a lot.
Yeah. Wow. I never thought about it that way. Cause you like, you see, yeah, up to like, what, like 20 patients in clinic some days. And it's like, that's just wild. Have you ever thought about what your life would be like if you never questioned or like you didn't listen to that internal voice about the ventilators and you were like, you got to just push through?
Yeah, I would have been an APRN like in the ICU during COVID.
Oh my God, that's wild.
And like, God bless them. Like I worked a little bit during COVID and it just, yeah, it's just really, it would have been really, really hard. I think, I don't know how any of them are left, to be honest. It just would have been burned out for sure.
And I think like one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation is like your work as a midwife is not easy by any means. Like you work more hours than I think literally any other person that I know. You still work extremely hard. Your job is so demanding, but it's so important to find something that lights you up because it is so easy to get burned out in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to switch gears because I'm so excited to have this conversation with you now because now you yourself are 24 weeks pregnant as a midwife. So overall, are you happy that you know as much as you do, or do sometimes you kind of wish that you didn't know as much as you do as a pregnant person, like going into all of this?
I'm a very logical, like type A person. So I think I'm pretty happy that I have that foundation and I understand what's going on with my body.
Yeah, if you weren't a midwife, you probably would have already like by the
been
time
to the
you got
ER
pregnant,
10 times. Yeah. Like I'm like thinking I have a UTI and it's like, no, it's just like the baby's head on your bladder. No, I think I'm really fortunate that I get to see a lot of normal pregnancies and birth every single day. And I really have been surrendering to that and trying to trust my body and have this feeling that I know it's going to be okay and my body's going to do what it's meant to do. And a lot of the things I feel are just normal pregnancy symptoms. And it's been really a really cool experience being pregnant and going through this for the first time and really understanding what my patients go through now.
Speaking of that, is there anything unexpected that has happened during your pregnancy that's kind of like helped you relate to them more?
Yeah, I think the entire first trimester was horrible. And it is for most people.
Yeah, your first trimester was brutal.
It's so hard. Like, I understand now that what's so hard about it is that you just have to continue your normal life and your work and your responsibilities. And if you have kids, and on top of that, you're exhausted all the time. I mean, I was sleeping what, like almost 12 hours a night and still could not keep my eyes open. And I was nauseous all the time. Like I felt hungover. Like I felt sick. Like I was, you know, running, like in the movies, like running to the bathroom, feeling like I'm going to throw up. And, you know, I'm so lucky that I just woke up one day and it just was gone. But for some people, it doesn't go away. It's so funny because I kept on thinking it wasn't going to happen to me. Like, oh, you know.
Like, this isn't that real.
It's
like,
going to be okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's probably just here and there. But it was like every day for weeks. And that was really eye-opening.
And then just like 14 weeks came and it was like clockwork.
Thank
like,
God.
Done.
Yeah.
That's
thank God.
So, so wild. And what's actually cool is you are seeing a midwife at your practice for care.
Oh yeah. She's the best. I knew the day I met her that I wanted her to be my midwife.
Which is like such an honor. I think that's so cool. Like I was telling someone this the other day, someone that works at the hospital, and they were like, the hospital should make that a commercial because like, that's just incredible that your sister has so, like, that's just great that you have so much trust in the care that your midwives provide there, that like you want to put your health and your baby's health in their hands.
I think when you're giving birth, it's really important to think about where you're going to feel the most safe. And for me, being with my midwife team is where I'm going to feel the safest because I know they all practice evidence-based care, but holistic care and individualized care. And I know when I go into labor, I trust any of them to catch my baby and to be there for me. And I think it's important to, you know, to work in a place where you believe in the care that you're giving and the practice.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, I wouldn't want to work in a place where I didn't feel like I could receive my care there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's been a really good experience so far. So
something I think that always, like, that has surprised me as your twin sister, like, the last 10 years, and like, surprised me in the best way possible, is you, I think if you were to come up with some differences between us from when we were, like, in our, like, earlier 20s to 30, we'll say, you were definitely more type A than me. I'm still a pretty type A person, but you were always a little bit more like, show me the numbers, give me the facts, controlled. Like, I think that's why you made to be such a great ICU nurse. Mm-hmm. But it's so, so beautiful seeing you now, like a decade later, really starting to embrace some more of the spiritual aspects to your practice and welcome more, like what you said, holistic care into traditional Western, like, evidence-based medicine. What do you think, like, is there anything that, like, triggered that, or anything that, like, caught your eye or that you read, or just, like, overall maybe even deprogramming certain things?
I think it started just seeing a birth for the first time and just feeling this sense that there's just something bigger going on that has nothing to do with medicine, and just feeling like you're witnessing something so raw and beautiful and empowering to your patients. And it really stuck with me. And I think even now, like, the best births that I attend are the ones where I step back the most and just let the patient do their thing, and I interfere as little as possible. And just watching that process, there's really nothing like it. And it definitely brings out this deeper side that there's more to life. And it's just nice being a part of such a really big transition for people in their lives and becoming a parent, not just for the first time, but as their families grow. And it's really beautiful to witness.
I'm so glad that we finally got to share your story of going from ICU to midwifery to now being pregnant yourself. I tell so many of my nursing students your story to kind of inspire them and say, hey, like, this is such a wonderful career. You can find what you're passionate about. And so I'm so proud to be your sister. And, like, I feel like I just brag about you all the time to my students and at the hospital. But I'm done, like, pumping you up and, like, making you feel awesome. It's time to bring you back down to earth. I want to call over Mason. Mason is Nicole's husband. Mason!
No, he's making dinner.
Mason, put down the dinner, put down the stew, stop attending to your pregnant wife. We need to answer some questions.
Spoiled. I mean, that's the truth, is, like, I probably wouldn't be able to do what I do without my loving and supportive husband. Okay. That's been amazing. Taking care of me.
So I wanted to round out this episode with pregnancy rapid fire. I want to hear from both Nicole and your lovely husband, Mason, answers to both of these questions. And I want Mason to answer them, and I want Nicole to answer them. We are also being joined by their lovely 10-year-old German Shepherd, Finn. It is just like a family affair here. So let's get these pregnancy rapid fire questions going. Okay. What is your favorite part of Nicole being pregnant, besides her massive boobs?
Well, that's number one for sure. I would say the second trimester has been awesome. Like, the glow thing I didn't expect. Mm. So, like, really, and I didn't know what that was until experiencing it. Which,
yeah, until
great.
Her hair is, like, fucking growing. Well, her 10 skin inches. Yeah, and everything.
Like, it's a real thing. And then I would say feeling the baby kick is really
cool. Aww. Is that, what, Nicole, what's your favorite part about being pregnant?
I think, yeah, just seeing my body change every single day. It's like, I don't expect it to keep getting bigger, but every day I'm like, oh, wow, he's definitely growing.
That's a lie. You like putting me in indentured servitude.
And, well, and it's nice because I ask Mason for a lot more help now.
Next question. What has been the worst pregnancy symptom of Nicole's?
Oh.
Just saying.
I would have said the fatigue, but also her hangry. Her hangriness is out of control, but the fatigue for me, like just watching you, like at least the first trimester, and even sometimes now, like, you're just spent at the end of the day. Like, you're at a zero, you know, so you just got to lie down.
The hanger is, like, a whole new level now. I mean, I was bad before I was pregnant, yeah. But now it's like, if I don't eat
get nasty.
Like immediately, like, yeah, I get nasty. And it has to, you know, it's like what I, like, I need to eat that specific thing that I'm craving right now, or
is that what
I'm
happened when we were in the car today and we stopped to get some food and Mason like took 10 minutes to get like a fancy sandwich and Nicole came back to, of course Mason had to get the most expensive like fancy sandwich and it took 20 minutes.
It was like a chicken sandwich.
I was so hungry. I know. So I was like, I just want to go home and eat.
Okay. Speaking of hunger, next question. What has been the most interesting food craving?
I mean, definitely, I think the most consistent one is Indian. Like, she just gets Indian food. All Indian food. The time.
I know. I'm bad patient.
Do you get, like, the same? Wait, aren't you, like, not supposed to have spicy food in it?
Yes.
No, I mean, you can't. There's no reason you can't have spicy food, but it causes really bad heartburn. And, I'm having really bad heartburn. And I just keep on eating it because it's so good.
You crave it. Yeah,
oh, and just, like, salty foods. But that's salty. Me normally.
I know, that
I'm
is you
like,
normally.
Come on. Yeah. Like,
who do you think is more like the crazy type A pregnant parent?
Definitely Nicole.
No, what?
Type A? For sure you. Like, I'll just be like sitting there like, all right.
You're like the food Nazi. Like, anytime I grab like a soft cheese or like, you know, deli meat, he's like, wait, okay. Can you eat that? Like, you have to.
One, you're talking about when we were not in the United States, where nothing was pasteurized.
I took Nicole to like a organic farm, cheese farm, and like, she couldn't
in
eat
Italy.
Anything.
Yeah,
in Italy.
You know, it's bad when the Italians are like, oh, you're pregnant, you can't have any of that.
Yeah, I know.
The, like, oh, the other side is I'm also trying to defend myself against your hanger. So, like, that's why
I'm trying to make this more enjoyable for you. I know it's weird because I know what to
do. You know everything. And I know nothing.
You know, I'm,
yeah.
Sometimes I feel like with the little stuff, I'm maybe not making this as fun. But, you know, we had our big ultrasound.
That was
good.
Really cool. That was amazing. Yeah. I loved that. Loved seeing all the, like, you know, the blood flow and all the Doppler. It was really cool.
Okay. What are you most excited to get on your registry?
Oh, for me, it's definitely like the big stroller, like the full Monty. Like that one looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, skate around with the kids. Like, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think I did register for some, like, the postpartum kits. You know, like the diaper and the wipes and the peri bottle and all that.
Necessary.
The necessary.
Very necessary. Have you guys talked about a birth plan together? Or, like, have you thought about an epidural? Or, like, because you've seen it all. You've seen everything literally from home water births to every intervention under the sun needed.
So this defends my answer about you being the type A person. I actually brought that up to you because I knew you wanted to have a birth plan. So I said, hey, we need to start talking about a birth plan. It also helped that, like, the book I'm reading, it's called The Birthing Partner.
Oh my God, everyone. I hope that you send this episode to your partner who needs to be as good as Mason, who's reading books on his own.
That comes directly from our midwife, Julie. She recommended that. So shout out, Julie.
Shout out, Julie.
Yeah,
love her.
I would say that, yes, we've talked about it, but we need to form one.
Yeah. So I'm doing, I have a doula. So that's big. I think anyone, if you can, you know, afford a doula and figure out if you need to put it on your registry to help, like, contribute to the doula cost. Our insurance helps pay for it. His company helps pay for it. So I think that was a big step for me, was learning and just really asking for help this time and knowing, like, I can't do this all myself and I'm going to need extra support during labor. Even though I know what to expect, like, I know I'm going to need someone else there to help that understands the birth process. And the other thing I'm doing is a hypnobirthing class.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds cool.
It's basically like learning how to hypnotize yourself. It's like, there's a lot of research behind it. Like when they, like back, like, you know, hundreds of years ago when people didn't have anesthesia to do surgery, like they would teach them how to hypnotize themselves.
And
I know this sounds really crazy, but it's really not. It's really learning about, meditating and how to breathe through your contractions and learning how to let your body, you know, relax and open and let the baby come down. And
that's
a
really
lot
cool.
of training here. It's so mental.
Yeah.
It's so mental. And I think in terms of epidural, like, I'm not against it. Like, I think a lot of people, like, have such a strict view on whether or not they want an epidural, but I'm going to try to go as long as I can without it and see if I can do it without an epidural.
Yeah.
Because there's a really weird part of me that just wants to know what it feels like.
Yeah, that's really weird, but, like, I kind of get it. Like, let me know how bad it hurts, and then, like, you can let me know.
I mean, I might be screaming and just be like, get my epidural, like, at 2 centimeters We'll see. Honestly, I've seen kind of the whole spectrum.
I want you both to answer this question at the same time, and you can't think about it ahead of time. It's going to be a yes or no question. So you have to say, and you have to look at me. You can't look at each other. Am I going to be allowed in the room? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What? I'm going to be allowed in the room. Oh my God. This is so exciting. Okay. I really wasn't expecting. I'm actually really, I'm really honored, and I'm really honored that you both did not hesitate. Okay. Next question. Rapid fire.
You're the auntie. And of course you're going to be there. Auntie
Jackie. I'll be sober. I promise.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, whatever.
I'll bring Nicole a sushi platter and the alcohol. Okay. Rapid fire. Next question. So you both now know that you're having a boy.
Yes.
Did you think you were having a boy?
Undecided. I didn't know. I thought it would be like either or.
Well, he wanted it to be a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't have like one feeling one way or the other. Like your gut didn't. Feel. You didn't. Yeah. Like, you didn't think.
If we're like being really honest, obviously like part of me like was hoping for a boy, like just a little bit more than a girl, but I would have been excited for both.
I had a feeling it was going to be a boy.
Well, you also saw psychics that told you.
Is she not a psychic? She's a spirit baby reader and a spiritual healer. So
yes, which actually Danielle has also spoken with the spiritual baby healer and has
been right about everything.
She has. She's been right about everything. So, okay. Just two more questions to end up this rapid fire. Just real quick, what's the best advice you've gotten so far about either parenting or pregnancy?
I think the best advice I have gotten is to ask for help when you need it. I'm always someone that's going to try to do it all myself. And I am really starting to realize like I'm going to need to be really honest about what I'm going to need. And our midwife has been really helpful with that so far, but just asking for help.
I would say the biggest advice that we've received is like just how to prepare, like how to get ready for when baby's here. And I think that's been the most helpful, like all the support from friends and coworkers and everyone just kind of getting us ready for kind of how to pace it and how to handle it.
Well, your nursery looks like it should be an ad for Crate and Barrel. So I'm like literally want to move into the nursery myself because it's so gorgeous. Okay, last question to round this out. What are you most excited about for being a first-time parent?
I think that for me, it's having firsts with Nicole. Like, you know, like we've been together for about a decade. We've been married. We've traveled together. Like we've had a lot of firsts. So this will be a new first and it will be pretty constant for a while, which that'll be really nice and special. But then also, I'm really excited for the toddlers.
When it's going to be it.
When their personality comes through.
Sweet. Yeah, you're going to be such a good dad. I am excited to just like the little things, like just cuddling on the couch and going on walks and doing new things as a family and, you know, just starting new traditions. Aww, just the little things.
That's really sweet. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I am ready to dig into whatever dinner Mason has cooked up for Nicole. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope that this really resonated with any of our nursing students or anyone in healthcare that's maybe thinking about not just changing careers, but changing paths within healthcare, making a change, finding a path that rings more true to you and speaks more to your soul. I also hope that this helps any of our listeners who are pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant or are also maybe an identical twin. We appreciate every single download, every listen, rate, review, share. It means the absolute world to us. It allows us to keep doing what we're doing. We are so grateful to have you here. Happy Friday. On that note, WOMED
out.
She's learning. All right, we'll catch you next week.